success looks so easy from the outside, but all successful people have had to overcome enormous obstacles along the way, and in many cases, look failure right in the eye. Most successful people don't focus on the struggle, and they rarely talk about it because that's not what creates success. Join us here, where we'll chat with serial entrepreneurs, both men and women, and share the good, the bad, and the ugly of entrepreneurship. We'll talk about the obstacles we faced and how to overcome them to reach the success that you desire. I am your host, Cami Lehman, and this is She's Invincible. Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today on She's Invincible. And we have an invincible one to introduce you today. Anne Sophie Reinhart is a mind, body, and leadership coach known for empowering women leaders to embrace self-worth and positive body image. Anne Sophie specializes in self-love and overcoming body image challenges, offering transformative strategies for balancing professional excellence with personal well-being. Her insights inspire women to lead authentically and live a life of fulfillment and self-acceptance. Anne is the host of the Boldly Magnificent podcast. Join us for this enlightening conversation with Anne Sophie on nurturing bold magnificence in both the boardroom and beyond. Oh my gosh. Anne, welcome to She's Invincible. We are so excited to have you with us today.
Yes, so am I. Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited. We were recording this in the afternoon for me, and I was just looking forward to this interview the entire day. So,
and I couldn't wait last night. I was like, oh, I'm so excited to talk to Anne in the morning. So I love the different time zones, right? Like, I always feel good because I'm like, hey, I still have 5 more hours than you do, right?
That's true.
Oh my gosh. But across the pond, and I'm just thrilled to have you. And oh my gosh, guys, brace yourself. We are just, oh my gosh, you might want to put this on slow-mo because we are going to go in every direction today and bring you so much value. Anne is an expert in so many things, and so many of them are so near and dear to my heart. And I want to bring to you as much as we can together today. And I'm not going to promise, but I bet we'll be back again. So brace yourselves and let's dive in. Ian, let's tell our listeners, how in the world did you get where you are today? And what makes you invincible?
That's a good question. You know, I ask myself this every day. How did I end up here? Well, I am from Germany, was born and raised in Germany in quite a well-to-do family. I'm the middle child of three, and had parents. My mom is a pharmacist. My dad is a doctor. So we were well off, perfect on the outside, not so great on the inside. There was a lot of turmoil going on throughout my childhood. We had a very toxic family dynamic, and it got to a point where home felt like a war zone, and coming home every day felt unsafe in such a way that I turned inward so much that at the age of 9 years old, I turned against my body and I started to diet. I started to exercise and slowly but surely went down a spiral of anorexia, then binge eating disorder, then addiction to training, to workouts. And those three things, they kind of had woven themselves together. And for 15 years plus, I was caught inside my mind. And all I could think about was how little I weighed, what I ate, how much I would work out. I lost all my friends. I focused on school. I was a great student. I was great at being thin, and that was it. And when I was 20-ish, I met a guy, and the guy, he was like let's get married. So within 6 weeks, we got married. And I thought I had found my savior, the one who was going to make everything better, right? Well, didn't turn out to be that way. But what I learned in that marriage, we ended up being married for 4 years, so which is longer than anybody thought. But in this marriage, I learned that, you know, I had to be the one to save myself. Nobody could save me from myself. I could run away. I had always loved to travel. I had always loved to, you know, to do things, to see things, but I could not run away from myself. I couldn't go anywhere in the world without myself. So in that marriage, I realized I had to save myself. And that is what I did. I started treatment for anorexia and got myself out of there. And in that process, I learned about podcasting, which helped me to learn about coaching and kind of all kinds of different ways. And so I began a podcast, then I became a coach. And more than 10 years later, here I am working as a coach, working with women in leadership who struggle with body image. And, you know, through all of this, what made me invincible is that even though I turned against myself and I focused so much on my body and was so trapped in my own mind for so long, that was also what saved me and what made me invincible. Because by learning to escape from that prison that I had created and learning to work with myself, with my thoughts, with my body instead of against it, I learned, you know, to stand on my own two feet. I'm a single mom, and I've always been a single mom. I had never thought it possible in my entire life that I would be able to support myself. And now I've been supporting myself and a little one for 10 years, and it's going really, really well. And all of that has come from that place of it's just me, myself, and I against the world, which was at first so toxic, but then became my strength. I don't believe that we're in this alone, but you can do a lot by yourself if you befriend yourself in a certain way.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and now we're going to unpack that, right? Let's unzip Correct. That case. Oh man. Okay. So there's so much here. So I think I'm going to say we're just going to dive in. So my first question to you, which these are all intuitive. I don't have one question written down here, but how did the eating disorder tie into this low self-worth? What were you trying to accomplish leaning into that?
Oh, yeah. So I was a little bit of a chubby child. It's what I've been told. So there was always, in our family, weight was always an issue. My parents were always on a diet. My grandma, my aunt, everyone around me was always on a diet. And weight was always a big thing. My family loves to eat. Everyone loves to eat. And so it was, for me, it felt so threatening to see everyone loving food and at the same time always talking about how they need to stop eating because they need to lose weight. And that was very confusing. And I grew up with that mindset. Like food and body and all that, it's weird and at the same time, my brother, who's 3 years older than me, he had extreme anger issues, and he would always put me down and always put me down in terrible ways. And there was a lot of physical violence. There was a lot of even worse mental violence. So I had no self-esteem, none. Like I was nothing. It's how I felt. Like I was nothing. And when I realized that by losing weight, I could become someone in my family, that was powerful. So suddenly I was so strong and I had such great willpower because everyone would eat and I would sit at the table and I would not eat. And everyone would admire that, which is a sick behavior, but everyone would admire it. And you know, I would lose weight and they would see it and it was so great and I would work out and you know, and that combined with that complete focus on school, where I was just an A student all through, it was just, I was the dream child in quotation marks. I had no self-esteem and food gave, and my body and being thin gave me that power that I thought I needed. And I was the only one, right? I was the only one in the family who was thin, considered thin. And giving, and even when, you know, when I had phases where I would gain a lot of weight in a very short amount of time because I just couldn't stop eating because I had been starving myself for so long. I knew I needed to get back to that place of not eating. That was always, I could not give it up because if I did not have that, then I had nothing. Like there was nothing there. And, you know, also that belief that I need to find a husband who is going to support me, which is, I don't know where that came from because my mom, very successful. I don't have that role model in my family where, and I'm not saying that stay-at-home moms are not successful, not at all. I just did not have that role model anywhere. So I don't know where this, I guess it's the complete lack of anything, right? Where I would not trust myself to be able to have a profession or to do anything. Outside of being thin.
Well, so, and that goes back to low image, right? This right. low self-esteem and low body yes. image is thinking how, and you even said this, when you started on talking about your journey was that you didn't even imagine how you were going to be able to support yourself, right. let alone now you're a single mom and you're doing both supporting yourself and your child and it's working out great. Oh my gosh. So that must have been like a programming in this, you know, chubby, low self-esteem, low value, low worth to think I'm not capable of doing anything great. So clearly I'm going to need to get a husband who's going to support me because I'm not going to be able to do this. Okay. So we're going to just tie this all together because, you know, sometimes in these conversations, the guest has these epiphanies too, but like, we always, as women, we need to know where it comes from. Like, where did it start? Right. And then how do we go back and fix that? How do we go back? And I don't know that we can ever fix it, but how do we reprogram that thought and those limiting beliefs to believe something new? And it sounds like in your case, you proved it wrong by going out and becoming successful and using what was a devastating diagnosis for something amazing where now you're able to help other people, right? And you're not chubby. I mean, I'm here with you right now and you are not chubby, but you're healthy and you're living your best life. And so they're not related, right? They're literally not related. Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's move on to, I have one burning question about being this desire to be thin and having this eating disorder and being pregnant. This is a big thing because you can't do that when you're pregnant, right? Because you will not have a healthy baby. So let's talk a little bit about what did you struggle with in your pregnancy and how did you overcome these things so that you could have a healthy child?
I mean, that is, My pregnancy saved me. It's all what I always say. It's like my child is he's my everything. But I loved being pregnant, which is so surprising. But I was already 2-3 years into that journey of, you know, fostering a healthy body image, of learning to love myself and what it means to actually love your body. And I always knew I wanted children. I actually wanted 4. I wanted a big house, 4 children. And that was always my dream until I had one. But no, that is what I knew. And that was my guiding star, my North Star when I was in recovery on those dark days where I, you know, when you start to, it doesn't matter what it is, you heal or you break down, you feel like, when you tackle big issues, you feel like you're falling apart and you're like a puzzle and you have these million pieces and you have no idea how they fit together. And in those days and nights where I just didn't know who I was without my eating disorder, that was the one thing that always kept me going. I was like, I'm going to be a mom. And I was married and we had tried to have a child, but obviously I couldn't get pregnant. But I knew I'm going to get healthy to have children. So for me, that pregnancy was the greatest gift I've ever received. And to this day was the best moment. It didn't happen the way I wanted it. It was not, you know, the dream. I didn't have the husband. Well, I had the husband, but our relationship had ended. But I didn't have everything I wanted, but I had the baby. And so while I love being pregnant, yes, it was messy. And I think it's you know, I mean, now we're 10 years on and it's gotten even worse when you hear the messages of how you're supposed to look when you're pregnant and all this, how you're supposed to look 2 days after you've had your child, you know, all these things. And but I focused on the miracle of having that child, and like, which is a miracle. It is a miracle to grow a baby, to grow a human being. And knowing that I was not just, in quotes, feeding myself, but I was also feeding another being, allowed me to eat even if I didn't want to eat because of body image issues. And so that was actually quite well during pregnancy. And I was big. And I received a lot of messages from other women saying, wow, you know, I mean, I was 6, 7 months and they were like, when's the baby due? In 2 days. So all these weird messages that don't tell anyone, right? But I'm a very short person. So I had, you know, I was big. And it did mess with my mind. Yes. And then I would always go back to, you know, this is what you wanted. And it's not just for you, but it's also for the baby. But yeah, that pregnancy definitely accelerated my healing. And then once he was there, I had someone else to take care of, right? So yeah. I couldn't get sick again. I just could not, because I needed to be a responsible human being. And I'm not saying that anyone who is sick is not, but I had that extra drive.
Yes, sure.
Right. You can't spend 4, 5, 6 hours at the gym when you have a baby.
That's right. So, and then what kind of things did you go through as your body was changing? Because, you know, here you are trying to starve yourself, not to gain any weight and be as thin as you can. And you've got these messages playing in your mind about you're chubby, you're not, you know, you're never going to be able to do anything, yada, yada. And then here, all of a sudden, you're getting bigger and bigger. And thanks to the crowd, right, who brought that out to your attention, little did they know, right? And I think that's a shout out that we need to say right now is you have no idea what you're saying and how you're affecting people. Stop saying silly things, right? It's we have no idea what we say. We need to just mind our own business and be happy for people and, you know, take care of that. Take care of yourself. Right. But what were you feeling as you're, you know, popping out of your clothes and now you've got to buy maternity clothes? And yeah, was that a big struggle? Like every day, I imagine you had to remind yourself, like, I'm getting this baby, right?
Yes, that was it was a challenge for sure. It was, you know, buying new jeans and then 2 weeks later buying new jeans and then, you know, it is. And then I would just, you know, really zoom in on, I'm big and using visualization. I'm a very visual person. And then I would just zoom in on this little embryo and what's happening inside. And, you know, but there were moments when I would stand in front of the mirror and I would just wish, you know, because whatever it was, whatever body part in that moment, just wish it to be different, to look different. And I used so many tools that I had learned through my coaching, right? That grounded me back in that moment, that you know, that attention you pay to your thoughts, and when you really realize how silly most of them are, how insignificant it is in the grand scheme of things to worry about, you know, which size you wear in this moment when, again, you're growing a human being. And that brought me to that moment. I think it was harder 5 years later or something, right? When you again begin to have more freedom, more time, when your child is at least for 2, 3, 4 hours, maybe gone, and you don't work, and sometimes you have actually a little bit of freedom. I think that's when my thoughts began to go back to my body. And I still, to this day, need to be very careful, vigilant, maybe, when big emotional things happen. My first reaction is to say it. I don't say it, but I, in my actions, then to restrict. My dad died 3 years ago, and that is what I turn to. I turn to running. I mean, that's what I want to do for hours, just to not feel right. Yeah. But I know my triggers and I know my behaviors, so I'm able to work with them. And I'm a woman. I think we all struggle with body image and the way we look throughout our lives, unfortunately.
Yes. And that is just unbelievable. And I was thinking as you're saying that, and it's a good thing you had a boy, right? Because it's mostly women who go through this, mostly young girls, teenage girls, women. It's not always, it's mostly not a boy thing. So that was a gift in itself. So tell me about after you gave birth. Okay, so now here we are, we have the baby, right? So the reward is here. Did you ever struggle with trying to hurry up and get your body back to normal? Like, because now you're not pregnant anymore, right? Now people see you and there's no baby in your belly. How did you struggle with that? What brought up, you know, with
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, yes. I wanted to have a girl. And there's this, I always like, when I realized I was going to be a single mom, I thought I was going to be like Lorelai Gilmore and Rory Gilmore of the Gilmore Girls, and we'll just be best friends. And I actually didn't know until he was born that I was going to have a boy. But yes, it is easier. And although boys do struggle more and more and more, unfortunately, it's easier to be a guy, to be a little boy in this world. And so he was born. When he was born, I was focused on him, and it just came natural to me to be there for him. And actually the funniest thing happened, and I think that was the only time in my entire life where I had lost my appetite. I couldn't eat a lot for the first 10, 14 days and of his life. And I just couldn't eat, hormones, whatever. That really was for the first time in my life that I felt like I couldn't eat, that I don't have an appetite. Whereas in my anorexic days, I forced myself not to eat. It was very different. So that for me was so interesting, how my hormones, you know, acted up. And then, yes, I mean, you know, I was young. I was 26 years old. My body just zipped back fairly quickly. And I got a lot of messages from women about that, right? Oh, you look, you know, 3 weeks out and you look the same way. Of course, I didn't look the same way. But again, it was everyone focused so much on my body. But I stayed active with a child. We would just walk, go outside. And I struggled to eat enough, but for other reasons. And I was focused on him, and I had no money at this point. Like, I had a little bit before him. I was freelancing here and there. I was coaching here and there, but nothing sustainably. So I had another focus. I really had to focus on how am I going to take care of my child? What am I going to do? So I guess I just had different things in my mind that occupied my mind, right?
Your focus shifted. Yeah. Correct. So I'm curious to know, after you gave birth to your son, did you look at your body differently? Was it easier to love yourself and your body because of the gift it gave you? Like, as you look at this child and think, I have to love my body. This body gave me this gift.
Yeah.
Did that work for you? Yeah.
It did. And, you know, even when I have bad body image days today, that's because bodies change. And most women have stretch marks when, you know, after being pregnant, whatever. I do. My body, my belly's not the same, right? It's just the little, what they now call mommy pouch and stuff like that. I mean, it's there. I have stretch marks in weird places. But yeah, I know where they come from. And even if they didn't come from giving birth, but for me, you know, knowing where that came from, yes, it helped. And you know what helped so much when my son was little still, and, you know, we would take a bath together or we would go swimming together and I would play with my belly button and with my, when, you know, the little fat on your knees and stuff like that, or little skin there. And I would actually use my body for him to laugh. And that, again, is a completely different way of looking at your body. It's like, oh my God, you know, my belly button can talk. So now he's cracking up over there. My son's cracking up. My child's cracking up. I can make others laugh with my, in quotes, flawed body. And, yes. And so, you know, focusing on that and also focusing again on being healthy enough to be active, to be going out with your child, to be doing these things, which I couldn't have done 4 years before I had him. And so it's, When you are trapped in a negative body image struggle, or when you have an eating disorder, your entire focus is turned inward. And if you can continuously turn that focus to the outside and have that balance between, you know, me-centric, but also the world out there, which is where life happens. It does not happen inside our mind, right? Our life happens with other people and in communication and in play and in all these things. So, but it was work. It was not something that happened like that, right? I did have to work on that and it paid off.
Yeah, it did for you and for the rest of the world, right? That has the opportunity to work with you. Okay. So I have one last thing I want to address about this. And this is, okay, your parents. Your parents were both very well educated. They were in the medical field. What was happening? Where were they when you were killing off your body, when you were starving yourself? You said your mom is a pharmacist, your dad was a doctor. Okay, I could see in depressed areas, in uneducated homes, in all of these things, I could see how this could be overlooked. How on earth could two medical professionals? How? I don't even want to finish the sentence. You know, answer that.
Yeah, I know.
Because I want the people to know, like, what, you know, it doesn't matter if you come from money or you don't. It doesn't matter if your parents are in the medical field or they're not. It doesn't matter if you grow up poor. If you have insurance or you don't have insurance, what on earth? Help me understand and let us tell these people, because we are speaking to parents and grandparents that have teenagers and have, you know, young children, and this is going on in front of them and they don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen?
Yeah, it's such a big, big, big cluster of things. So first of all, we're talking about the early 2000s when they started, right? Or even before that, we did not talk about eating disorders the way we talk about them now. Up until, I mean, I started treatment in 2011, I think. Even then, I didn't really know that eating disorders, that they existed. I didn't know that this was a thing. So it was a completely different conversation. And I'm glad it's different now. But so first of all, nobody really knew that eating disorders were so dangerous, right? And then the second thing is that I mean, our family was always on a diet. It's what was being, what our parents have been told. Weight Watchers, kids were on diets all the time. It was normal, right? I mean, it's like the obesity epidemic and every child has to be and whatever. So it was normal to diet, to restrict, to for children to do that, which it still is to this day. And it sickens me. And then I was their child. So again, we had a very toxic family dynamic and there is a lot of history to that. But I was their child. First, they didn't want to see it because it's such, I mean, what do you do with that? Right. Then I talked with my dad over the years and it's a lot. He felt like a failure. Like I am a doctor and my child has it and I don't know how to connect with her, what to do with her. How can I even, my relationship with my mom was always just, you know, daughters and I don't know, it was difficult and she would try to help, but I would block it. And then she would start to yell and I would yell and it was just this, nothing helped and nobody could get to me. They could tell me everything, right? They would tell me you have to eat. They would try to force me to eat. They would say that, you look healthy, you look unhealthy, which felt good to me. If anybody told me that how unhealthy I looked, that was a win. That was like, I am doing it right. So every time they told me, we're worried. I was like, yes, let me continue doing that, which nobody knew because at that time, right? Again, that's not what you talked about. And the more they tried to help me, the further I pushed them away. There was just no awareness. And I'm so happy that although it's very, the progress is so slow. And my dad was a general practitioner. Like he had no specialty in this. And then they don't learn about that. Doctors don't learn about any of that in med school. But as he had to continue his educations as doctors do, I mean, at least there were marginal topics that they would kind of talk about. So I'm very hopeful that things have changed in Germany and are changing. There's still a lot of work to be done. It's just eating disorders. And the language you use when you talk to someone who has an eating disorder is so tricky. And it's very tricky to say anything right. Very hard to say anything right. Because if you tell them they look good, you're it's horrible for the person who has an eating disorder. If you tell them you look sick, it's bad. Whatever you say
is wrong. It's wrong. There's no right thing.
So one of the things that when I work with parents, I used to be very active in self-help groups, right? For parents, for people who have not just parents, but also, you know, partners, people who have loved ones who struggle with an eating disorder. And I always say relate to them on a human level. Don't make it about the food. Don't make it about the body. But be like, I am worried about you. What is going on in your mind? What is like on that? Make it about something else. Tell me about your interests. Tell me what you do when you, what do you think about when you go for your runs or when you like, when you, I spent an entire year in my bedroom because I was so depressed. Like instead of running into the room and trying to force your child out, ask, you know, what are you doing all day? Like, well, how do you feel? And through that more human level, you may be able to connect, because that is what it's about. It's about a pain, right? It's not about the appearance. It's not about, because you can never be thin enough. And on the other side, you can never eat enough. It is not about that. It's about what is it you're trying to mask, right? And if you can somehow get to that, you have won a million stars and you're so much further and you can help them so much more in order to get to a point where they say, this is not worth it. I need help.
Right? This is so good. You know, and I feel like it's the numbing, right? Like when people, when they're addicted to something, right? Whether it's an eating disorder or it's alcohol or drugs, right?
Shopping.
Yes. Like they're trying to fill a void and we're trying to put a Band-Aid on it instead of figure out where is the void? What is the void? And what is a healthy way to work through that, which I think I love what you're saying is like this human level is like the mental awareness of it, right? Mm-hmm. What is going on in your head? What are you thinking about? What are the stories you're telling yourself? Because it is all in your head first, and then it plays out in all these other things. And this is unbelievable. The whole thing, this whole conversation. So let's shift to, how are you helping other women? So now you are a coach and you are helping women to live this life of excellence, right? And balance and success in business. So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing and how this is all, it seems like such a gift that now you're able to bless these other people because you know the truth and now you can help them to overcome whatever it is that's blocking them.
Yes, it's an amazing, amazing gift. And I have so much fun in my work, although it's very deep work, but I love to make it fun. You know, when the more I committed to that mind-body connection of who am I without a certain form, without a certain shape, who am I, who's inside my body? The more I did that, the more successful I became and the more confident I became. The more I spoke, like the more me, I always say the more me I became. And I realized how powerful that mind-body connection really is. And that is what I do when I work with women who, you know, have leadership positions, who lead. We're all leaders, by the way, all of us, we're all leaders. There's so many people who look up to us. And it doesn't matter who you are, what you do, you have people looking up to you. It might be, you know, a little small people who look up to you. It might be, you know, people at work. It might be people at church, or your partner, whoever. You have people who look at you as a leader. And I believe that, and I'm, you know, I trust that I'm preaching to the choir here, but something needs to change in this world. And women are so equipped to lead this change and they are already doing the work. But how can we do this work even more effectively? And my answer to this, if you are deeply connected to your body, if you have made peace with your mind, you can, you know, work so much more effectively. You can be, first of all, happier. You go through life more grateful. You have better relationships. You are able to have a better career. You are able to lead teams or to lead, you know, to move a vision forward with so much more fortitude because there's no more hiding. There is no more hiding. And I just hate seeing so many women saying, you know, my body is, I have to lose blah, blah, blah pounds in order to whatever it is. Or I have to change this, or I have to do that before I. And we stand in our own way so much. So when we turn inward and we begin to realize, all right, these are all just, in the end, very silly thoughts that we that just inhabit our minds and we allow them to take up space every single day. We allow them to tell us the same thing over and over and over and over again. Until we say, all right, stop. What's actually going on? Let me become aware of what is happening in my mind. And is this helping me or is it tearing me down? Once we allow ourselves, all right, to see, I don't really like what I'm hearing. Let me work with that. So you begin to allow different thought patterns. You begin to cultivate different beliefs. You begin to tell yourself different things than, and you use your body, you do it with movement, with tapping, through active meditation. I always love taking the body with us and using the body as a tool. because it strengthens everything we do in our mind. Like, we are not just, you know, oftentimes we walk around and we're just either a body or we're a head. When we hate our bodies and we deny ourselves all pleasure, right? We're just a walking head and the body's just this thing there. Or it's the other way around. We just focus on our body so much that we forget to actually live. But if we combine them and we realize that this is an entire thing, we are a human being with the body and a mind, and we can work together. There's just no end to what you can achieve. And I get to work with women to do that, right? And it's amazing.
Oh, this is so good. Okay. Well, on that note, let's talk about some of the things that you're offering. So I know you have a quiz. You also have a mini course. So tell us a little bit about those things.
Yes. Thank you. So you can go over to my website, which I'll tell you about later. And there you will find a quiz that will give you some questions to figure out where you are with your self-image and whether it's holding you back from having the life that you desire, right? Whatever that life is, whatever mission, vision you have, just take that quiz. It will lead you through some questions, and you will get tips and tricks at the end of it. And then I have a mini course that is called Escape Diet Prison Mini Course. It's a 3-day program that will give you that kickstart to really begin the work on your body image, right? On your body image and self-love journey. And, you know, if you've been listening to this conversation and you're like, all right, this is me, you're talking about me and I want to get to the other side of it, I'm ready for my next level life, then you can book a complimentary coaching discovery session with me. And I would love to talk with you and see if we're a good fit.
I love it. I love what you said, your next level life. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay. And tell everyone, where is the best place to find you and all of this information?
Yes. Thank you. So you can go over to annasophie.us/invincible, and you will find all the information on there. So that's annasophie.us/invincible.
I love it. And I love it because it's invincible and you've got it all set up already. So you guys jump over there, check it out and see how she can help you. Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode. And just before we get to the good stuff, right? The good, the bad and the ugly. I have this great announcement for you. We are starting the Pod Power Hour, which is a virtual event that's going to happen on Wednesdays at noon Eastern. And so if you've ever thought about having a podcast, if you have questions, if you are a podcaster and you want to come and meet other podcasters and learn what's new, what's happening, tips and tricks to be better at this amazing passion of podcasting that you have, we would love for you to join us. We're going to have experts there that are going to be sharing their genius. It's going to be amazing. So, and if you're a host and you want to come meet some amazing people that could be potential guests for you on your show, come on out. What a great way to get exposure. Be sure to check it out on my website at CammieLehman.com, as well as follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Whatever is your favorite platform, we will have registration there. You do need to register to attend. And it is on Zoom. So super simple, just 1 hour every other Wednesday. We start on May 4th. So don't miss out. Get registered today. We can't wait to see you there.
You have moved from fighting cancer to discovering how to live beyond it. But what now? With so many emotional side effects still unknown, as a new survivor, you find yourself in a void as you navigate through the isolation, fear, and an uncertain future that can overshadow you and your family for years to come. Instead of focusing on the uncertainty of cancer, consider how strong and determined you are, and think of the strength demonstrated by those who stood beside you through it all. Consider this. You now get to choose who you want to be, and what your intentional, fulfilled life can look like. You made it through treatment. We can help you define yourself as a survivor. We're here to help you through this moment, to walk beside you as you shift your mindset from counting the days of life to creating a legacy. For more information, visit www.adventuretherapyfoundation.org or contact us at info@adventurefound.org.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know what else to say. I think we covered so much here, but we're not done, because on She's Invincible, we promise our listeners that we're going to bring them fierce entrepreneurs, and we're going to just shine and spotlight their expert zone of genius. And I think we have done that so well today with you. Oh my gosh. I don't think I left a stone unturned. Just so, so beautiful. And I just love your passion that comes through in, you know, one, being grateful for the experience that you had that you can use to help other people. And that is amazing to me. But we promise our listeners that while we're spotlighting these fierce entrepreneurs, that we're also going to pull back the curtain. See, everyone wants to have your story, right? Everyone wants your success, but they have no idea the price you paid. They only know what we shared just now. So we're going to tell some stories. Are you ready to be authentic, even more? Oh my gosh, because you've already been. It's like, oh, is there more? Oh my gosh. So we're going to share the good, the bad, and the ugly right now. Are you ready for that?
Always. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So the first part we love to share is the good. So tell us the good or the greatest part of this journey so far.
The greatest part of it is that I did that. I was the one who made this happen. And I never thought I could. So just knowing the strength that you can garner and gather if you have to and really, really, really want to is incredible. So yeah, that's the best part.
I love that. Oh my gosh. Okay. So let's talk about the bad. We're going to save the ugly for last, but tell us the story about the bad part of the journey.
I think the bad part is that, I mean, it's a lot of work. And the bad part about that is that, yes, I missed some of the parts that are really important when it comes to my son. You know, I work a lot and I worked a lot. And, you know, sometimes he would come up to me and I would be on a coaching call and he would fall asleep on the floor because he was just so tired and I had to work. I mean, there were a lot of these moments where I feel like, in those times, I thought my son was sacrificing. I have reframed that to say that, you know, he saw his mom work in order to provide this life. But in that moment, it felt like, oh, crap, this little being is he's sacrificing a lot. And I am sacrificing, you know, picking him up from daycare or having days where, you know, where he would not go to daycare like other parents did, whatever. So it felt like, yeah, time was very precious. And that did hurt at times. Yeah.
That is hard, right? And especially being a single parent. I mean, your parents both had careers, right? So I imagine you guys were alone a lot and they missed a lot of what you did in your growing up. And now here you are. And I think it's different, right? Because you're the only one when you're the single parent. Yeah. So there's not even anyone to help share or do fun things, you know, when the other one's working. That is a different dynamic. I love that you figured it out and that you're making it work and he's living his best life too, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, I love it. Okay, that was all fun, but tell us about the ugly. I know. Tell us about the ugly part.
The ugly part in this journey is, it's the talk, it's the gossip, it's the mom shaming, I guess. And that surprised me, the level of talk about me not being there on school days, being able to take a day off work and, you know, help out at school, or me just not always I traveled a lot, and I still do for work. And, you know, there was just a lot of bad mouthing that. And, you know, they can talk about me, but what was really ugly, and that happened last year, was that the teachers told me that schoolmates of my son told him that, well, your mom's never there anyway, or your mom doesn't take care of you anyway, something like that. And that got at me. That really got at me, where he was taking the brunt of other moms' bias towards me. And I there was a lot of frank conversations with him about that. He never said anything. He doesn't talk about his feelings. I don't know if that's because he's a boy, because he's 10 years old. I don't know. Yeah. He doesn't know it any other way. And he's never lacked anything, right? I mean, my parents, now my mom, they take care of him, and they took care of him whenever. Like, he was never with strangers, or I made very sure that he has a great support system. And yet him have even just these comments, that made me blow up. And that was a day where I'm not someone who gets angry very fast, but I got angry, and I'm still angry at those parents who, you know, their children have it from somewhere. I mean, yes. I just don't understand how you can be unsupportive of other parents, right?
Right.
And I always believe, and I still do, that we all do what we can, and we all want what's best when we have. I just believe that. And so, yeah, that's the ugly part of it all. That is the one that hurts.
That is ugly. And as women, we need to do better. As parents, we need to do better. And, you know, I think there's, you know, how there's always like this stigma, you know, from one country to the other. Well, so all of us here in the U.S. always think like that only happens in the U.S. It's really rainbows and unicorns in Europe and in all, right, in all the other countries. I think this is a wake up call to say, hey, you're in Germany, right? You're in Germany. Yeah. People have eating disorders there too. And they have, you know, and they're single parents, and they have bullies in their lives and in their surroundings. And it's everywhere. It's universal. It doesn't matter the language you speak or the place in the world that you live. We need to do better. We need to do better. I could say that 100 times. We need to step up. And I am so grateful to have you here with us, and to have you share the truth, right? Authentically, it's not easy to talk about our flaws and places that we struggle or come up short. But it's always fun to talk about overcoming, though, isn't it? And that is such a joy, because we get to do that in a way where we can help other people. And I think as an entrepreneur, there's no better way to live than to figure it out and go back and tell the others. And that's what you're doing. You have overcome, and you have figured it out. And now you are here on this platform telling the others, follow me. I know the way. I can help you. And we need more of that in our world, wherever we are in the world. So thank you so much. And to our listeners, be sure to click the link in the show notes. I know she gave you her website address, but all of her links to everything are in the show notes. So we wanted to add this little special message to those of you who are celebrating Easter. And really, I think this goes for any holiday when it involves food, which, right, food is social. And when we get together to celebrate a holiday, we're always eating food, all the foods that we shouldn't eat, you know, too much of it, whatever it is, right? When we think about all that we've talked about in this restriction mindset of food. So would you share with our listeners just a little bit about this Easter holiday? Oh my gosh, it's a sugar addiction. So it's the holiday to celebrate all the addicts of sugar. But share with us as your memories of a child, and now even raising a child, what were some of the things that you did with this eating disorder? And what are some of the things you have in place for your son to make sure he's not doing that and following suit? So share with us.
Yeah. You know, just you bringing this up, I have so many memories of Easter and Christmas and all the holidays, birthdays and all that. It's scary. These holidays are scary. And again, you know, I come from most of my stories about the restrictive side, but I've also had the other side of, you know, I couldn't stop eating. And holidays, knowing you'll be around family, most likely there will be a lot of food, there will be a lot of candy, a lot of yummy stuff. I mean, those chocolate Easter eggs, and they make the white chocolate Easter. Oh, I could die for them. But in those days, it was just pure horror and fear. So I think if you have someone in your family, then make sure you create a safe space for them to either talk before the holiday or ask them if, you know, do they need anything different? Make it cater to them in these times, right? Ask them, do they want to have chocolate? Do they not want to have chocolate? Because different years can be different, you know, depending on where you're at and which stage. And then if you are the one who's struggling on these days, then think of a few strategies before. So don't diet and then go on. Like, because we do that, we feel like, okay, I'm just going to be good 10 days before Easter. I'm not going to eat. And then on Easter day, all you do is think about the food, and you cannot even think about anything else or be part of anything else. So go and eat normally, go into these days having eaten what is normal for you, whatever that means. And that's a whole different story, but do that. Then have strategies. What I used to do is I used to write myself little love notes on post-it cards, strategies that would help me to calm down in these moments. When we're in a stress response, we can't think of anything that will help in that moment. So have it handy, prepare. Then, you know, ask yourself, what is this holiday about? Is it about being around family? What can I focus on that's different other than food? Do I want to have great conversations? Will I catch up with my cousin who I haven't seen in 2 years? Like, what can you focus on that is not food? And then don't be ashamed. I think, like I mentioned, I have so many memories of hiding Easter eggs after having found them, hiding them somewhere, or basically just going to the bathroom, eating, and then, you know, so that nobody would see it, and then coming out and continuing to eat. Just allow yourself to be seen with food. And I think that can be very scary, but just be out in the open with it. And what I do with my son, I mean, my son parents will kill me for that, but I am of the opinion that you can't create an eating disorder if all food is allowed. So food is always, like, there's chocolate. We have chocolate in our house. It's always there. And he actually came to me the other day asking me, are you still going to give me this and that for Easter? And I was like, yeah. All right. Then I'm going to ask grandma to give me that. And, you know, she doesn't really have to give me chocolate. So there's more money for the other thing I want. So for him, chocolate really is just one of the other things he wants.
I love it.
And that has always been my philosophy. I don't restrict him on anything. And I tried to do the same for me. Like, that has been, like, when I started to recover, it was, I can eat everything. And that is a process that you go through where you literally want to eat everything. But at a certain point, you're just like, chocolate is chocolate. And I don't know, chickpeas are chickpeas, and fruit is fruit. And what do I actually want? And how do I feel when I eat that or after I've eaten it? So,
isn't it true that when someone tells us we can't have something, we want it more? It's all we do is obsess over
it. All that time. You know what? I had my teeth cleaned a couple of months ago, and just routine care. And the hygienist, they told me, well, you can't have coffee for 3 days, certain kinds of fruit, you can't have that. And all I wanted for 3 days was I hadn't had that in years, but I was like, I'm going crazy. All I want is black coffee now. All I want is to eat cherries. All I want is, like, everything I should not have. And that is exactly it. That is what you do. You create a craving that normally is not there.
Yes, it's our minds. As soon as we start to restrict things, access, all we want is that thing, that one thing. It's insane. Oh my gosh. Well, here's to all the chocolate Easter bunnies, you guys. But yes, if you're celebrating, happy Easter to all of you. And remember, don't limit it. Do your thing. Enjoy it. Love yourself. But love yourself. And there's a way to do that, to enjoy the things you love and love yourself at the same time. It doesn't have to be hurtful. So I'm so excited about that. Yes. All right. Yay. And here's to a chocolate Easter egg. Thanks so much for sharing with us today. Oh my gosh. What a joy. Such an honor for me to have you here from Germany. You know, my German story about my grandfather, which I one day I'm going to do an episode about that. So everyone knows, because I don't talk about that a lot, but it's so special to me to know that you're there. And I hope that I can get there at some point intentionally, so that I can see all of the beauty of Germany. Even though there's some flaws, they're everywhere because we're all human and we all come with that. But I am just thrilled to have you. And I love what you're doing in the world and the work you're doing. And kudos to your son for being so lucky to have a mom like you. You're amazing. Thank you. And you're invincible. And I appreciate you so much. And to our listeners, I don't know where you are in your life or your business, but if you are face down on the ground right now, just get back up. That's all you have to do. That's the first step, is get back up and get the help you need. All the resources about these topics will be here in the show notes. Get back up. You can do it. I know you feel like you can't, but I'm telling you, you can. You are invincible. Let's go. Thank you for joining us today. If you were inspired or learned something new, please follow the show, submit a rating and review, and share us with your friends. If you would like to chat to see if you can attract your ideal client and monetize your business through podcasting, please book a free call with me at CammieLehman.com. I can't wait to meet you.